Universe. Good evening. Today is Wednesday, February 9th, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. Welcome to Paranexus Universe Radio. I'm here with my good friend and co-host Grant Rubin downstate. Grant.
Hey, Doug. How you doing, man? You got another birthday creeping up on us, I think, somewhere down the pike.
Yeah, it's only, what, 4 days to the big D-Day.
What does that mean?
It means
you're going to be like
39
in Holden?
Oh, wow. Thanks. You honor me. It'll be 52.
Wow. Hey.
Yes, I'm getting younger, elder.
Yeah, well, hopefully more wiser as each year passes. Oh,
of course. I mean, yeah. Duh. So, tonight we have Phil Hoyle with us as our guest, but we have run into some connection problems, so we are scrambling, and the ever-expert Jamie Havokin is on it, and we're getting connected. So in the meantime...
Thank goodness we're so light on our feet, right, Doug?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have my...
Yeah, here we go.
And we're getting there. We're
doing good. We're doing real good.
We are...
Putting our audience at ease.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. Putting on our, so why don't you talk about the Jerusalem videos... And
I haven't seen that many of them. I don't know how the folks in the audience feel about them. To me, they look very questionable.
There's an interesting thing there with those videos in the parallax view, where when you're looking at something in the distance, I'm sorry, I'm trying to do two things. I'm trying to add Phil.
Well, that's okay,
so,
yeah.
You look at something in the distance, and up front, it moves, you know, it moves in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
Hard to explain.
Uh-huh.
And so why don't you take it from there while I figure out how to...
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, like I said, I haven't seen that many of the videos, but some of the things I thought were very questionable in that video from the limited amount of time that I spent watching it was just the way that they moved. To me, they seemed more mechanical. And, you know, then and it just almost, you know, like was done for more for effect, not all that spontaneous. It was kind of neat how it floated up and was at one position and then it seemed to drop. But something about it to me just didn't seem right. It seemed too good to be true. There seemed to be a lot of people in the immediate area down there where it was taking place, where it was dark and you couldn't see what was going on. So, you know, I have some difficulty with that as well. And, you know, I haven't read a lot about what's happened since. What's the general consensus been as far as you've read, Doug?
The last that I read was that it was considered a hoax. You know, next week, our own Brian Parsons, is going to be on with the top stories of 2010, and I'm sure that we can delve into that. As it turns out, though, we do have Phil Hoyle on the line, and we'd like to welcome him to Paranexus Universe. Welcome, Phil.
Thanks very much, mate. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
Hey, Phil, it's a pleasure to have you, and welcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
And tonight we're going to be talking about abductions and animal mutilations. I've been talking, and I can't talk. And so we're going to get into that discussion. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you in the chat room. If you'd like to call in, you're more than welcome to do that. So using the number at the top of your screen. And, of course, we have Jamie Havokin screening calls, so you'll get to talk to him first, which has got to be the ultimate joy. And I don't say
uh-huh.
that
uh-huh.
facetiously here. You know, I mean it. All right.
He's our main man behind the camera.
Yeah, we thank him for that.
You bet.
So, Phil, I didn't get a chance to review a lot of the information for other reasons, but abductions and animal mutilations, I mean, obviously they're connected to the field of ufology. What got you into this line of research?
Well, basically, when I was quite young, I started to have a number of obviously very unusual experiences, dream recalls and things like this, and they weren't abduction incidents at all, but they led on to me studying the Apollo's rocketry science. And when I was in my early teens, I was having multiple UFO sightings with witnesses that were clearly not conventional or astronomical. So I was slowly drawn into this, and by my mid-teens, I was studying the Sumerians, UFO abduction stories, just the whole phenomena, and it just constantly grew and grew until I set up a number of my own groups to obviously look into many different areas of the phenomena, but also in particular to study the claims of people that they've had direct contact with aliens.
Interesting. So you said that you had your own experience?
Well, it's like I say, it's not the typical abduction type experience. It's more of seeing structured devices that were clearly not our own, but also having experiences with beings and entities that are not the norm or the typical type of greys or things like this. It was more dimensional beings and other things like that, but it's all part of the UFO phenomena, but it wasn't the typical thing, but it led me to obviously continue to search for answers, and that's obviously what I've been trying to do.
You know, Phil, one of the questions that comes to mind right away, and I really want to draw on your expertise on this, is that, to my knowledge, and maybe it's just not played up here in the West, I mean, over here in the United States, I mean, in a Wild West sometimes, I think, but I've never heard of any cattle mutilations over in Europe. Does it occur over in Europe?
Well, that is virtually correct. I mean, there's very, very few. I mean, there's been a small number in the UK, a few in Ireland and Northern Ireland, and it is the vast majority of the cases are really to do with sheep, also with horses.
Uh-huh.
But you have had
some.
A very small handful. But again, at the end of the day, that's basically, it could be very misleading. There's so much ignorance regarding the phenomena that maybe hundreds, if not thousands of cases have not been detected.
Yeah, absolutely. Or attributed to something else.
That's exactly right, yeah.
In your experience with those cases that have been going on in the UK and Europe, have any of them been similar in some of the cases that we've had here out in the American West, and you know, where they look like somebody have gone in and they've cored out certain body parts or paid particular attention to certain parts of the animal that they've obviously been interested in? Did you see any similarities there?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the ones I have seen, say on a small calf, for instance, that was typical, and the other case files from our other colleagues from around the UK are typical of what's happening in the US and South America as well. But also, I think that basically, what's taking place regarding cattle, the same thing's happening to sheep in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had. Do you know who Butch Witkowski is?
I have heard of him, yes.
Yeah, yes. And he, you know, he did some, in some of his work, he's come across cases that he thinks were human mutilation cases. Have there been any cases similar to that in the UK, or?
Well, not verifiable. I mean, there's been evidence that some cases have been detected, but again, it's when it comes down to try and pin down hard evidence, then, you know, it's very difficult to do that. So, I mean, there has been some rumor, speculation, and some people purporting that this has taken place. But, you know, it's so rare compared to maybe, you know, the world's population. Is it obviously...
absolutely. We at least are under the assumption that it's fairly rare because, you know, part of Butch's work was talking about the number of missing people that go missing in the United States alone based on actual federal law enforcement records, which was pretty astonishing, that the percentage that they could not explain. And it always made me kind of wonder.
Yeah, that is something that is also mentioned in the UK, is the amount of people that, and it is quite a high figure, but I think with technology as it is today, and even with mobile phones, computers, laptops, everything, you can come across an incident if you were walking out in farmland or in isolated areas of a case of a mutilation, and you could film and have that on the internet within hours, and that's just not happening. And because now this technology is just also available into the third world, so What I'm saying is that we have to look for verifiable facts before we draw too many conclusions in that area.
Absolutely.
Because I do, one thing I do say in meetings when people bring this subject up, they say, well, right, all these people do disappear, but how many do actually do at the end of the day return for one reason or another? And when I ask everybody to put their hands up if they know anybody, even not just a relative or a friend or even someone from their area, no one ever does. So, I mean, it's a case of we have to really wait and see, and let's look for more solid, hard facts that where we can pin the whole animal or human mutilation phenomena, because there are so many things going on under one heading that it's, I think there's something deliberately muddying the waters about the agenda.
Oh, yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. And both Doug and I, you know, I know I can safely speak for Doug, but, you know, we're all for the whole trying to approach it in the most scientific manner, not jumping to conclusions. I'm just looking to try, you know, when you look at the whole phenomenon, you're just trying to put pieces of the puzzle together and try to make some sense of it, because it's pretty bizarre and puzzling at times and disturbing. It can be disturbing.
Yes, very much so. I mean, some of the cases we've studied, obviously, from America and other parts of the world, and even the ones here in the UK, it would certainly imply by some of our surveillance operations and cases here, is that whatever's doing the mutilations, or certain groups that are doing them, have the ability literally to walk in and walk out, and you not even see or hear them. So, you know, if we're on a surveillance of an area that has UFO activity, animal mutilations, abductions, you know, you're always thinking in the back of the mind, you know, back of your mind, could you end up being the next victim? We are quite aware of this, but it's the case. What we're trying to do is to look at every disposable means to determine exactly what he's doing and why. And we're working on a number of new projects to try and get around maybe some of the stealthing technologies of the perpetrators, of the mutilators.
Here's a question from the chat room, and it's the $64,000 question. You know, the question is basically, if UFOs exist and so forth, why do they mutilate animals and humans? I'd like to just get your response, Phil.
Well, I mean, like I said, that the evidence, hard evidence, isn't there, that we haven't got J-Rod or Little Grey locked up in Manhattan for killing anybody. The jury is more than still out as it comes to the mutilation of animals. And then again, the whole title mutilation is very misleading, because it's a precise clinical surgical procedure, not a mutilation like an attack. And a lot of people think, obviously, that, you know, these things shouldn't be inflicted upon animals. That's fair enough, but we treat animals with absolute contempt. Yeah. But what we might find at the end of the day, that if there is an intelligence from outside sampling these animals, it's for a very good reason, and it might even be at the bottom it could determine whether we survive the next 100 years, because what we're doing to planet Earth is an absolute disgrace.
No doubt about that. We had Bill Burns on the show last week, and Bill brought, you know, now that we're talking about this topic, he said that he thought that it was, you know, he conjectured that a lot of it had to do with the harvesting of stem cells, and that that some of his case that they had on UFO hunters, where they found looked like a half hybrid in vitro in a cow that had been mutilated or dissected, was the result of these big pharmaceutical companies that were trying to do it under the table, you know, because of the laws here, the draconian laws against stem cell research, which was kind of an interesting thing. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I thought it was fairly interesting.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I think there's so many theories that's put forward, because it's so complex. I mean, you know, anybody studying the abduction phenomena will find it's very complex. But the more you do study it, the more you see patterns, meaningful patterns to an agenda. But that's not the case when you look at the animal mutilations. Coming back to stem cell research, that could be one line of one of the agendas involved, because there are many. I think there's definitely outside, but also a number of earthbound agencies, and there's also a number, I think, just a little bit confused. But I think when the earliest cases of of animal mutilation first started to be detected. And this is before, obviously, the Appaloosa Mare in New Mexico. This is even back into the 50s. We've had farmers tell us about finding these animals. There was no such thing as stem cell research at that time. So I think
that's
that what,
true.
What we seem to draw a possible conclusion, I say we have no definite theories because there's certainly not enough evidence. But one line of inquiry certainly is that whatever's doing this has a multiple agenda. I mean, some of the actual tissue and enzymes could be maybe taken for one particular agenda, but one of these, we're quite sure, is to monitor the environmental contamination of the food chain by obviously pollutants and whatever, and their direct effect upon us and obviously the environment. And obviously we talk to people obviously qualified vets and even people in the natural health and say, look, why would you take these certain specific glands and areas of the tissue? And they say, well, most likely, if they were actually trying to test a human or even an animal for a concentration of substances that shouldn't be there, they would build up in these particular tissues. So I think definitely in the UK, the highest incident time for the mutilations, because there's highs and lows, is usually starts in mid-January when the lambing season starts and the next generation of sheep obviously is going to be born. And we have cases where farmers might come across an animal that's been dissected maybe 150 metres from the farm in a particular area of a field, and within 1 or 2 days the following year another animal will be found in that exact same spot. So something's coming back to the same location year and year again to sample animals, maybe looking to say, well, right, what's the degradation? Has this improved? Has it got worse? Because quite honestly, when you see how much, you know, artificial substances that are entering the food chain through, food supplements, it's quite shocking.
Oh, it's terrifying. And, you know, the thing that I've always kind of thought, the thought that crossed my mind was, you know, we can't rule out the fact there's so many different hypotheses you can come up with. But, you know, I've often thought, what if they're chrononauts? You know, they're from our future, and you know, they've experienced the ramifications of whatever happened, and you know, they're trying to track it. Or the other thing is that, you know, maybe the abductions is part of that because they seem to sometimes run in families, and it seems almost like maybe they're tracking who survived or who had the genetic constitution to persevere through whatever, you know, trial or tribulation, if one is coming, or genetic, you know, whatever, disease, whatever, to survive that. So it's just a thought that kind of crossed my mind because, I mean, the possibilities are endless. But the consistent matter of tracking.
Well, that's right.
Makes one wonder.
It does. I mean, because like you say, the more we seem to find out, researchers globally, and we try to obviously strike liaisons with people on an international basis, and part of that work is to try and to find out not just some individual's theory and how they've come at that theory, but also to look at all the evidence they have in different countries to see if there's a cultural or geographic difference in procedure or reasons why certain procedures will be different. And there is quite a large diversity. And also, obviously, I've just been saying, quite a substantial amount of different opinions are being drawn, because basically I think people at times are looking at different areas and so drawing different conclusions. We need to put or everybody's work into one big pot, and so we can all sift it out and find out what has got common denominators and what hasn't. So, like I say, we rule in nothing in and nothing out, and I think that whatever's going down, I think is very, very important to our survival as a species. Like you say, with generational abductions, we do find that quite a number of farmers do have some kind of interaction or contact abduction while also having their actual animal sampled. And I'm working with quite a number of these cases at the moment. So, but I mean, the actual abductee, the witness, in these cases, say some farmers, do not perceive the actual contact to be hostile. The majority have gone through quite a profound spiritual awakening. I can say I think we can't be too judgmental, especially humanity as a species.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Phil. And you know, the thing that it kind of makes me think of too is Arthur C. Clarke. You know, where he would talk about the gardeners. The gardeners who planted everything and the caretakers, and it was basically none of our business what they're doing what they're doing, and they're oblivious to some degree as to what's going on with us, but they, at the same time, they're monitoring and they're tending their garden.
Well, yes, I think there's a lot of evidence for that. I mean, that comes through some of the abduction contacts we work with. Is that, you know, they say that, you know, it's like the telescope Kepler is finding all these exosolar planets.
And Doug and I were just talking about that before we came on air tonight.
And there must be. Well, I think I saw a program just recently on Discovery where they estimated 10,000 advanced civilizations within our galaxy alone, and that is 100 billion galaxies. So I mean, what does that?
Well, it's
say
almost like the best scenario out of the Drake Equation.
It is. It's just beyond our. Our wildest dreams.
I think one of the things too that Phil that they don't talk about, and a lot of people don't recognize, and I know you're gonna, you know this, is the fact that within 40 light years of Earth, there's a lot of stars. There's a lot of stars that are like, to quote a Star Trek, a Class M stars. There's a lot of them out there, and so it's not like I think most people in mainstream science. Will tell you, or cosmologists will tell you, you know, the distances are so vast, you know, it's a long, long ways. But I think in the Drake Equation, it was like one habitable planet in the Goldilocks zone every 10 light years.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, we have one of the things that really made me chuckle, to be quite honest, is because obviously part of the work I do, or the great majority of it to do with abduction contacts, is I've gone back to the earliest recorded cases, to very private works and publications back in even to the 1921. Now, what happened there is that these people that were deemed to be crazy and lunatics in the 40s and 50s were actually naming star systems or quadrant solar system that were out there by number, how many planets, what type they were. Well, these are starting to be found. And I'm thinking, well, right, here we go. I mean, 10 years ago, we were the only planet in the universe, and now it seems to be life in every shape or form that will ever be. And coming back to about the gardeners, I think there are some fantastic worlds out there, but I think also that Mother Earth is literally a nursery for the creation of other life forms. I think maybe life is very complex and is out there, but also some of these intelligences actually leapfrog the evolution or the actual new species that come into form by actually taking species from this planet and seeding new worlds that are capable of sustaining life. And I think that sometimes they alter some of our life forms to fit slightly different environments or objectives. I think planet Earth is, as I say, is a cradle of life, and it's maybe spread right throughout our own galaxy.
Wow, that's a great concept. I hope that's true.
Interesting.
That's a high honor, and boy, if we're polluting that, we deserve to get our posteriors kicked. We need to be jumped someplace else because we're certainly not being very good to Gaia. You know, of course, then again, it's not us folks, it's, you know, the powers that be, but nonetheless, we should all be taking responsibility.
Community responsibility.
Everybody, yeah. We're all riding on the same rock.
So, Phil, you've been doing this for 30 years, and what have you discovered? I mean, have you discovered any commonalities, any interesting traits, any interesting data regarding abductees, or to give you any indication to what the agenda might be? I know you've kind of talked a little bit about it, but more in a nutshell, what have you learned?
Well, like I say, to say it's complex and we're not dealing with one group or faction is an understatement. But what I can say is that there are a number of very advanced civilizations working under one umbrella. And so when people actually describe completely different looking entities, different craft or whatever, they might have the same agenda, but they're coming from a different part of that agenda, and it can get quite confusing. But without exception, Obviously, a lot of the actual abduction procedures are very stressing at times, but I think maybe over 98-99% of the cases I work with, it would definitely be that there's a massive spiritual awakening, and these people definitely have got a higher psychic ability and also spiritual connection to planet Earth and the creation force.
Yes.
And when these beings interact, they seem to turn or heighten that to a point that their lives change dramatically for the better, and go in search of ways that we can actually work together collectively as a species for the betterment of ourselves on planet Earth.
Are you saying this psychic ability is the result of the abduction experience, or it was prior to?
I think it was prior to, in as much these people usually have that ability, and it is one of the reasons, because a number of abduction witnesses have actually said during their experiences, why have you contacted me? Why me? And they say, we are seeking out our own. And when they've gone on to explain that, they say there are certain people on planet Earth are carrying more of their DNA than others. They're the ones they're targeting, and they say that as we are now, they once were, and as we are now, we can become, but we have to grow up. We have to take responsibility. We have to stop prioritizing materialistic gain, wars, and all the rest of it, and we have to realize that we have got something beautiful on planet Earth, and we can reconnect to other groups or nations from beyond the stars. But we just got to get our priorities right.
So your basic approach or stance on this, if I'm not mistaken, and please correct me if I am, is that these abductions tend to be more of a positive evolutionary growth type of experience rather than, even though they're stressful, rather than a bad experience or a negative.
Yes, I mean, it can depend on the individual. I mean, without exception, I think there's only a handful of people that don't have the initial trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder from the initial contact. That's obviously going to be something, because really what's taken place, it's a reawakening when we explore the cases. What we find is that even somebody that's maybe in their late 50s or ever has had a situation, like a number of these cases, where they've had no real knowledge of the fact that they've had multiple experiences throughout the whole of their life since their early childhood. But soon as they're having, I call this event the first recall, the first time they're allowed to have an actual experience and remember it in its entirety, then they start realizing that their life is quite different to what they initially envisaged, and they seek out, obviously, to find out what has gone on and why for. And then when we start going back and exploring these experiences, we find that they've actually forgotten substantial amounts or had that memory suppressed. But when they do find out more and more, they seem to change their whole perception and prioritize of their life. So it's a case of they've traumatized, and we have counselors and different people that can help to overcome that. We have regression hypnotherapists if they want to pursue that, and they are of the right psychological profile to try and regress and retrieve more memories. And usually, with the people, when they find more and more knowledge about what's actually taken place, why for, and what information's been related to them, that they see the whole thing in a much more positive light. But that's not for everybody, and some people obviously are going to be so traumatized that it's not in their interest to pursue it, and they stay traumatized.
But you're saying that it's the whole thing is for good purposes, is what you're
saying. Well, like I say, I can't say the whole thing's in good purposes. For the simple reason is we are dealing with, like I said, an umbrella of intelligences, and there are ones outside the main agenda that are not working out in their interest, and obviously they've got their own objectives.
Yeah.
So the whole thing isn't sweetness and light, because there are things that are not sweetness and light, because there are intelligences that would rather humanity stay enslaved through war than be allowed to grow up and get out there.
Well, you know, I think it's really difficult for us to try to fathom the alien mind. I think it's not difficult, it's impossible. And I think that, you know, the best example that I can give it is what I think we lose sight of is, like a lamprey and a salmon, a parasitic. What about a parasitic alien intelligence? That's been their whole way of life. That's what their whole culture is. And maybe in their mind, you know, by being parasitic on us, you know, they're doing us a favor. So, I mean, and I'm not saying that's a whole ball of wax, but I think that you really have to, when you start trying to think of the number of possibilities, I mean, think of it in the ocean. Compare the universe to an ocean, and, you know, think of all the parasitic species that exist in the oceans of the earth that survive quite harmoniously with their host. And how do we know the situation isn't similar with us? Now, our host may be benign or he may not be, but it's just, you know, something to kick around to think about.
Oh, definitely. I think every possibility has got to be explored to its full potential.
Oh, yeah.
Because if what has been actually stated over the last few months, few years about the discovery of all these planets, and if this, you know, we can say, right, just hypothetically, there are 10,000 advanced civilizations in this galaxy. Well, how many billions are there through the whole of the cosmos? And if they've overcome, like it would appear to be, that they can travel through our galaxy and maybe interstellar, everything imaginable can be out there. So you could have everything from one end of the spectrum to the other, good, bad, and the indifferent. So I think we mustn't stick labels and rubber stamp anything. This is that or wherever. We're starting to identify certain groups with certain objectives and agendas. But like I said, amongst them, there are ones that are not too savory.
I guess the best example would be like, you know, when Cortez came to the New World. You know?
Yeah.
Well, what do you make of David Jacobs' hypothesis?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, if you look at, it's quite extensive work of David Jacobs, and he's done some brilliant research. But obviously, I think a lot of conclusions drawn can be down to the individual. It's a case of, with his book, The Threat, for instance, I mean, a lot of people say to me, we're going to be invaded and aliens are hostile and they're going to do X, Y, and Z and all the rest of it. Well, I think by the sole reason we're sitting here talking today, that wouldn't happen if they were actually hostile to the extreme, because they'd removed us hundreds of years ago. I mean, we have the ability to actually wipe planet Earth clean of humans as we speak. These bombs or these technologies were developed 20 plus years, 30 years ago, genetically selective germ warfare. I mean, it'd kill every human being on the planet, even certain actual different cultures. So, I mean, it's something that if they wanted us removed, they can do it. It's a case of the message that comes through isn't one. And this is because I don't draw any pre-conclusions to any case. I'm looking for common denominators globally over a large time frame. Now, if we're dealing with nothing but hostile aliens, the message is a little bit funny, because they're saying, stop your wars, stop destroying the planet, start realizing how beautiful and fantastic it is, start working together as one, and you will overcome your problems. Be connected back to nature, the biosphere, and the rights of all living things have a right to coexist in harmony as it was meant to be in original creation. And if we start doing that, and that's their message, and they're hostile, we need more of it, because we are the ones who are creating our own problems. And until we sort ourselves out, and we cannot expect any race, even if they are partly responsible for our creation, to come up and make clear up our mess, because we are starting to realize ourselves, ground roots, where the problems lie. And it's not at the bottom of the scale, it's at the top. It's what's running the show. The captain of the boat's got his ideas wrong. He's causing a problem. We need to really re-educate the people that are actually making the decisions on this planet, because they're not only getting it wrong.
That's the part that's by far the most troubling, okay? Because, how do we do that? Short of outright revolution, I mean, how do we do that? And, I mean, they're so powerful, those people. They call the shots. I mean, my best example, and I don't want to get too political, but I think the best example of that is the opposition to green technology.
Yeah.
There's an incredible opposition, you know, because of the oil magnates and the oil people, the oil industry that, you know, can just dictate. And sometimes I've been, you know, kind of concerned that they're going to, you know, sell oil till there's, you know, like one barrel left and do nothing to try to develop something, you know. And so, I mean, to me, that's driving the whole Western civilization to ruin over, you know, a finite resource that we think is infinite, or people are thinking it's infinite, and it's just like, oh my goodness.
Yes, yeah. It's very disturbing, and I could say we don't want to talk about politics, because it doesn't matter what party or group you talk about, if you end up with the same result. But what I can say is that what I glean from the thousands of case studies globally that I've researched, and also the hundreds of cases I've dealt directly with in this country, there is at times a slip of information at times that, you know, they relate why they're here, what the connection is, and the connection is far more complex than people can ever believe. A case of, well, I do get this constant thread of information that a line has been drawn in the sand, and it's saying, look, we have actually passed you solutions to your problems, alternative technologies. I mean, Adamski, for instance, was apparently actually passed the information to actually create what's called SEG generators, and then John Searle in the UK, and Wilhelm Reich, and it goes on and on and on. And I've even seen prototypes now of these generators on YouTube, and with people in America developing, and they're virtually perpetual motion. They are electromagnetic armature.
I know the one you're talking about. You're talking about the guy who was like a backyard mechanic, and of course he's completely shunned, but his machine seems to almost be the you know, the thing that scientists say is impossible. It's producing more power than it takes in, or something along those lines. It's just incredible. Yeah. But you know, the thing about that, I think, guys, is that, you know, always in the back of my mind somewhere, and call me paranoid, I keep thinking that 30 years ago, somewhere in the United States or someplace else in the world, somebody came up with a great idea, the most efficient solar cell you'd ever see in your whole life, and they went to somebody, made the mistake of going like, look at how efficient this solar cell is, to somebody, tried at the patent office, and all of a sudden it was just like completely squashed, you know, like poof, gone. You know, because it was like, no. That's, you know, like, you know, we're oil. You know, it's like, no. We're not even thinking about that. And it just makes you wonder. It also makes me wonder how many entrepreneurs are out there that have different ways of doing solar. I mean, we live in Florida, Phil, and you don't see that much solar energy here in Florida. Some places have it, but not residential homes.
Well, they have it for their pool.
For the pool. But, I mean, you know, you would think here in Florida we'd be, you know, doing a lot of our power from, because those days when the sun beats down pretty heavy, you can generate a lot of solar power. Just, I guess, the devil is storing that power.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I mean, I think, like you said, I mean, these generators, the alternative solutions to a lot of our problems are there. And I saw a documentary that actually completely reiterates what you've just said. This is about 20 years ago. I'm not sure which oil company it was, but these guys were actually, it was their job to travel all around the world looking for scientists or just people that were developing alternatives and buy them up. And so there's never going to be anybody to challenge the oil industry.
No competition.
But the only problem is, what I'm saying is, and this is what's been indicated, is that obviously that situations could be developing where something is losing its patience, and in that case it's a situation where, that you know, there might be some kind of retribution if something's not done before long
on the part of the aliens.
Well, that's what's indicated, that there are a number of groups and factions, and they are working together, but some of them have completely different attitudes. Some are saying, look, we need time and patience, we need to try and educate or even show, you know, humanity where it's going wrong. We've already realized the majority of where it's going wrong, and like you say, we feel powerless, but we're actually not, in as much that I think there are things going on behind the scenes I cannot talk about that are actually will manifest in the not too distant future.
Think that human beings are indigenous to the earth, or are we a species that, if there are these many civilizations, like in the best scenario out of Drake, do you think that humans or humanoids are a fairly common species?
Yes, I do. And some of this, so I can only draw what I've learned through some of the contacts, especially some of the earlier ones, because obviously these questions have been asked by the witnesses, and what's been related more than both, majority of times actually, is that they say that man, which we're not, true man at all. It's like the Nordics are described as being the true man, and they're out there. It's a form that they, that has been seeded, or is even now being said by anthropologists, that is most probably something that is the epitome at the end of the evolutionary scale, and it's throughout the galaxy and the cosmos. But these races say that humanity is actually a blend. Human means tiger man. And they said that what's actually happened is they blended their DNA to enhance a primitive bipedal species, and we're actually a blend. We carry a primitive trait that is aggressive and destructive with their more advanced genetics. And what they've actually basically done, not really intentionally, but we ended up being really a technologically advanced to a point, savage. And now what we're doing with the abductions is they're trying to glean out the worst parts of our genetic codes and enhance the good bits, so we can actually, you know, become more spiritually connected to planet Earth and other forces, and realize our place in the cosmos, because we are a blend, and we're, and at the moment we're a little bit of a loose cannon, to say the least.
Are you
so like an angel, and how does Shakespeare put it? Something so like an angel and so like a devil. I mean, it's like, I can't even get it close, but yeah, we're that odd combination that yin and yang of good and evil, you know, that must make us very interesting to observe.
So, Phil, tell me, are in terms of the different races that are visiting the Earth, are they all benevolent?
No. No, I'd say the vast majority would be working under a predetermined hierarchical agenda, and so they're sticking to that. But some of these races, some races can be provoked easily than others. They are working to an objective, and what we have to take into account is that we must remember that we are, like I say, we're like in the Middle Ages, we're not the center of the universe. That's, I think, the priority is to try and reverse the destruction of planet Earth by giving us the awareness to what we're doing. But I think if we continue to do this onslaught for materialistic gain and not take on board the technology you've just been speaking about, I think that something will take away the carrot and bring out the stick. And so I think we've got some interesting times, to say the least, coming up.
So what's the deterrence from these malevolent races from taking us over?
I think that the evidence has even come from many areas, even the Soviet Union, that in all probability planet Earth is under the protection of certain higher groups, and there are at times incursions or events that take place that they would rather keep under control, and at times they can't always do that. I think that planet Earth is quite honestly in quarantine, and we're not going to be allowed out until we do actually take responsibility for our actions. But they are trying to keep certain other groups from interfering more directly than they have to this point.
So there's a galactic federation of sorts that are keeping them at bay.
Yeah, that's what's been implied back even to the 1930s through some of the contacts, that there was multiple groups, civilizations from different corners of the galaxy that came together for a specific agenda that they operate on for their own protection and the protection of planets under their jurisdiction, with planet Earth being one of them.
Do we have any indication where we originated, where we truly originated at? Because I think anybody who's familiar with the cosmology of where we're at, located at in our galaxy, the Milky Way, is that we're out on the frontier. We're a long way from the center of the galaxy, and you know, if stars here where we're at are, say, at best 10 light years apart, maybe say 40, it's got to be, the odds of being closer, it's got to be better the closer you get into the center of the galaxy or the center of our Milky Way.
Right.
It certainly makes you wonder, you know, because anybody that's coming here has come a long way.
Yeah. I think not only that, it's that the whole phenomenon again is so complex, because it's like you said, planet Earth is, if I recall correctly, 100,000 light years from the center of our galaxy. We're in a little backwater on a spiral arm. Now, but what I'm also saying is that the evidence also within the abductions and the contacts is that some of the intelligences we're dealing with are not alien. They're only alien to us. And I would say is that just because you're not born on planet Earth doesn't make you an alien.
So what does that all mean? They're alien to us, but they're not alien.
Because the dinosaurs were supposedly wiped out 65 million
right,
years ago.
Right, who's to say that they didn't evolve and leave the Earth or that they're still here? And some people think that they're still they're subterranean. But yeah, that we co-inhabit, and even Jacques Vallée has said that. Jacques Vallée has said in some of his works, like, look, well, let's not say it's from outer space when in reality, what if we're living in some sort of symbiosis with some other species that we can't fathom what it is, but it's we cohabitate here on Earth with it. And periodically it likes to play the trickster, and it comes out and it shows us a little glimpse of something here and there to let us know that it's here.
Yeah. Well,
and we've lived together for in cooperation for since we began.
That's right. And I think that's a possible. I think it's part of the jigsaw. It's a component. I think we are dealing with some true extraterrestrial intelligences, and some that are perceived to be. But I also feel that the whole thing is so complex. Is that in our very very distant past, some indigenous forms that actually evolved to a point of high intelligence, not only left planet Earth to possibly explore the galaxy, but they also use genetics to alter their own physiology to adapt to new worlds that were not quite where they came from, their home world. And when they left and when they returned, they look quite different. I think people would have quite a shock what the research indicates certain intelligences actually originated and what they look like.
I'm sure you guys are familiar with this too, which I also find fascinating. As somebody I heard recently was talking, I'd heard it before, and I think it might have even been on a Star Trek series one time in one of their episodes. But it's an interesting concept: is that our DNA? Scientists say what percentage of our DNA? Maybe they understand 5% of our DNA, and the rest of it they claim is junk. Maybe that I'm underestimating or overestimating, but there's a large percentage that they really don't know what it is. And somebody, I think some scientists said, it may have been Watson or Crick implied this, that maybe there's a code in there.
Yeah.
That once we can decipher that code is going to tell us, like, it's going to just be a mind boggler that's going to verify everything you've been talking about that just says, look, man, this is the genetic plan. This is who you are. You've gotten smart enough to figure it out now. And so, maybe that's where a species has to get in order to make that next shift, and either, whether it's spiritual enlightenment or whether it's, enlightenment to begin with, to realize that, everybody's a brother. And
that's right.
And maybe that's what it takes. Who knows?
Yeah, I totally agree into that because I've studied, obviously followed the unfolding genome project. And the situation has been, I think it's quite a large amount. I think it's well over 65%, I think, if I remember correctly, has been determined, but the rest of it has been deemed to be junk, and nature doesn't make junk at all.
Yeah.
And some of the contact cases I've explored where the actual witness actually questioned, they say, you look horrendous, you look this and that, and you're so different to us. And they said, are we? They said, the butterfly wasn't always a butterfly.
Now,
when you look at the caterpillar and the butterfly to an alien, they would look totally different. But one metamorphoses to the other, and the caterpillar carries the genetic codes to develop and grow into something very beautiful. And I think we are no different. I think something is happening on a conscious plane that's triggering different DNA codes that have been dormant for a long period of time. And people are, I've talked to so many people about this and the way their lives changed when they have certain experiences that they actually, everything they seem to live for is to reconnect to the planet, to to work towards overcoming problems, healing, and helping and changing. Everything they stood for before was quite the opposite when they've been like reawakened to a point. So I think there is so much potential there that we can use for good. All we need to do is to try and get it out there and bring it into one large family. And that's what we try and do in our own group in the UK, is to put these like-minded people together.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. You know, I really believe in the human spirit. And you know what? I've worked with people for most of my life, and the one thing that never ceases to amaze me is the good in people. And, you know, there's that spark there, and I think that, you know, if we could break down a lot of the barriers and communicate a little bit more, you know, we could be one big happy family, because that's what it's going to take.
And I think we are doing that. I mean, I'm in agreement that a consciousness revolution of sorts is coming about. And, you know, I attribute it in large part to the Internet. I mean, you've got a bunch of people now who can communicate together, who don't know each other, who can share like-minded theories and hypotheses and philosophies and develop those. And more people are becoming aware of who we are as a global human family, and frankly as a universal human family, and so we've got that paradigm shift of sorts going on. We've got people, essentially we're raising the consciousness because of programs like this, because of others who are involved in related fields, you know, whether it's science or metaphysics or anomalous research. We're all trying to really understand the same thing. Here's a question from the chat room, a couple of them. Referring to this Galactic Federation or these benevolent aliens, will they stop us from starting World War III?
Well, I think it's been said before that it's come about in the early 60s, I think, over the Cuban crisis, there was evidence that something intervened. I know I've come across a number of validated incidents in the Soviet Union, and obviously the ones, you know, in the nuclear strike command bases with the Atlas rockets in America, where obviously nuclear weapons have been neutralized by...
That's right, Maelstrom Air Force Base. Right.
And all I will say with this, because all I can say is that we're plugged into areas that are obviously sensitive, but it's a situation that I feel that something from outside our previous awareness is absolutely desperate for us to realize that we need to change, and they want us desperately to change without them making too much of an influence or in our decision-making process. But I think if it comes to a point where they feel that something catastrophic is going to happen, and I don't want to say this so people can think, well, that we can really be off the wall silly and something's always going to protect us, but I do something will actually maybe... take action that will limit certain aspects of a conflict, but also impose their will more outright if they feel that they're going to be defied on every level. What I'm trying to get at without saying too much is that something, like I said, is extremely, extremely upset what's going on down here, and I wouldn't really rule out anything towards intervention to maintain that this planet exists for a very, very long period of time as the nursery and the nurture of every kind of imaginable life that's not just here but what's yet to come. So I think that we really need to take responsibility and make sure that we don't walk any further down the destructive road that we're already walking down.
Well, we have a caller on the line, in fact, Tiger, who asked that question. Tiger, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you back.
Thanks. Phil, I was wondering what your thought was on the Anunnaki and what if they might have had a hand in messing with our DNA to make us like a slave race.
Yeah, I started studying the Sumerians and the Anunnakis when I was 13, so I've obviously made it a point of really researching as much as I can. And what's obviously with the works of Zachariah Sitchin, I think there that is a big component of what we are. I think there's so much of that that should be taken seriously. What's interesting to myself is that when I explore a number of these cases, people actually come out with information about the Anunnaki. They actually draw the symbols, because the Anunnaki is a multiple, how can you put it, level intelligence that has virtually like different system lords, like you see in Stargate. And when you see all these different groups in different uniforms of different badges, they're really doing different parts of a bigger agenda. And I think that these races have manipulated us and our DNA, and they've actually stated in a number of times that the initial manipulation was for us to become their slave race, their pet, whatever they want to call us. But what happened at one point was the realization that, that their tinkering that had upset the natural progression of our species, and we are a blend, and they hold some responsibility to the fact that we're not in our original form, and are now causing a lot of problems to ourselves, and they do have a case to answer, and that's why I think there's an accelerated interaction. But the Anunnaki component to the phenomena, I think, should be taken very seriously.
Thank you for answering that. Appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right,
see you next show.
You betcha.
So we are down to our last 2-3 minutes here, and in a nutshell, Phil, over the span expanse of your research, you know, what's a big point? What's something you've learned that you'd like to share with other researchers and even other people?
Well, I think one thing we must never do is to be judgmental about other races and their intentions, especially when, like I say, we are such a species that have got so much to learn. I think we need to really is to believe in ourselves, that within all of us, irrelevant of color or creed, we are connected and we have the ability to aspire to great things. We just need to set things aside from the past and look forward to the future, but obviously try and work to a conscious connection back to the God force or where we came from.
All right, well, very good. Very interesting stuff. And next week, Brian Parsons is going to be joining us, a Paranexus board member. We're going to be talking about the top anomalous news stories from 2010 and perhaps a bunch of other things. So we'll look forward to having Brian on next week. And also, Phil, do you want to let everybody know your website before we...
Well, we've got the animal mutilation site is the apfu.org, and our new abduction site, which will be going up for the first phase in the next month, which is it's UFOIRU, which stands for the UFO Investigations and Research Unit, and that's the parent organization that runs all the different investigations. So, I mean, that. You know, we'll be out there and hope to maybe speak to you another in the near future about some of the things that we've been investigating.
Well, that would be great. So we appreciate everybody joining us in the chat room tonight, our live listeners, those who are listening to the archive, also for joining us. And if you haven't visited Paranexus, please do so, paranexus.org. We're an association of anomalous researchers, and we're looking for people who have a serious interest in it to share and to sharpen. We all sharpen each other. So invite you to come there, also Paranexus Academy for training courses. Phil, thanks so much for taking your time, especially early in the morning, wee hours in the morning for you to join us.
That's no problem.
It was a real pleasure having you on the show tonight, Phil.
Thanks.
Come back and visit with us again. We'd love to have you.
I certainly will do. Thanks very much for inviting me on. Thank you.
Very good.
All right.
Sleep well. And we also like to thank Jamie Havikin for screening our calls tonight and being our executive producer. We look forward to upcoming shows, and we wish everybody a great week. We'll see you next week. Good night.
All right. Terrific. Everybody have a great weekend. I'll talk to you soon.